Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Welcome to Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and hey, well, it's Friday, so you know what that means.
Start spreading the news.
That's right. Schomburg Stu is here. How you doing, Stu?
I'm doing okay, enjoying the 80-degree sunny weather in Schomburg. How about you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, same thing. I don't think I've seen the sun all day. But, hey, if you'd like to call in to Stu, call in and talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link. Get yourself over to Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we'd greatly appreciate it. But don't forget we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, Stu is still not out there on Twitter, but feel free to reach out to me at BurkTime, and I can pass anything you need along to Stu as long as it's clean, I guess we would say. So we'll see how that goes. All right, so I don't know. What's going on?
Well, another squeaker for the Cubs today in very, very inclement conditions at Wrigley Field. I felt sorry for the fans who were in attendance today. And wasn't today the first day they could have 60% capacity?
Yeah, today was the first day of the increased attendance. So I'm sure I don't know if all the fans showed up, but I'm sure they sold the 60% of tickets because, you know, people have been dying to go to games. I believe Dan is scheduled to go this weekend.
I hope the weather is better. I think it's supposed to be a little sunnier tomorrow, but it still will be quite chilly for late May. Don't forget June 1st is Tuesday, so it's very, very poor weather conditions today for the game, which prevented a couple of balls from going out.
You forgot one thing when you started this whole thing off. You forgot to say the first place Chicago Cubs.
That's right, because since St. Louis hasn't played yet, the Cubs are now one half game ahead of St. Louis, correct?
Yes. So.
Well, that shows you how poor the Central Division is.
Yeah, they have surprisingly found their way into first place, which is kind of frightening. So.
I'm not sure if they would do that in any other division, but their relief pitching has been very solid lately. I'm quite surprised about these various players they came up with, and they all seem to be doing the job for the Cubs, too.
Yeah, you know, so far, I mean, they've basically plugged a bunch of journeymen into that role, and, you know, sometimes that happens with a bullpen. You just find the right mix of guys, and for whatever reason, it works out.
It's a funny thing they could have this great bullpen the entire season, bring the same players next season, and they get hammered.
You know, and I've seen teams do that, you know, where they wanted to make sure they get their relievers back because they had the best relievers in baseball, and it just, you know, the next year, for whatever reason, they can't get anybody out or, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, this makes an interesting spot here for the Cubs, you know, and I figure you, as big a fan as you are, this is a good point for them. You know, they're going to hit the point here where they're going to have to be to decide if they are competitive or if they're going to continue on this rebuild track, because let's face it, We know they're not bringing Chris Bryant back next year. They're not going to put up the money for that contract that he's going to want. You know, we also, you know, we're looking at, you know, they tried to lowball Anthony Rizzo, so you've got to wonder how that relationship is and if they can get it done. And nobody's even mentioned Javier Baez, who's another guy who's going to get a very large deal on the free agent market. Do they continue on their rebuilding path, or do they try to win if they're contending?
They're probably going to be forced into trying to win. I'm sure they're surprised. They're just as surprised as the knowledgeable fans are about how well they've done so far this season. And it's kind of shocked me, too. But this puts them in a kind of a quandary, because I think they were deep down, they were going to be sellers at the All-Star break time of the year, but now they have to change their mind. It would be a disservice to the fans if a contending team were sold off at All-Star time.
Yeah, you know, but we've seen teams do that before where, you know, they've been right there in a playoff race and they've decided to, you know, just continue to move on and, you know, go with their plan.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, I think the White Sox a few years ago maybe were three games out of first place and very late in the season, and they started selling off their players anyway.
Yeah, they famously made, I believe they called it the white flag trade. So, where they just, you know, they dealt off, I think they dealt off one of their top starters and a couple other players.
Yeah, and the thing was, as I mentioned, that they were only a couple of games out of first place when they did this.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it is possible we could see the Cubs do something, you know, very, very similar, you know, and it puts them in quite the interesting spot, you know, when it comes to this. And, you know, another interesting fact here is, you know, the Yankees just announced yesterday that they expect Luke Voit to miss the remainder of the season. You know, when he was hurt to start the year, they called and checked in on Anthony Rizzo. You got to wonder now if the Cubs listen, being that they couldn't come to an agreement earlier and he's in the last year of his deal.
In fact, I also saw Chris Bryant's name bandied about as a possibly being dealt with to the Yankees.
Well, you know, he has shown the ability to play first base as well as, you know, the corner outfield position, so that really increases his value. And, you know, the Cubs got everything they wanted out of Bryant. He's playing, you know, he looks more like the Chris Bryant who won the MVP. You know, he's playing multiple positions. Their biggest problem is the fact that they're winning, and you got to be able to explain to your fans that you traded him.
In my opinion, I think that Rizzo will remain with the Cubs, but I think that, as you pointed out a few minutes ago, Bryant will be dealt.
Yeah, well, you know, I think Rizzo is signable. You know, he's got a really good reputation in Chicago. You know, he seems to like it here. I know all his charity work is, you know, with the Cubs in Chicago. So I think he is very signable for them. It's just being able to work with him. Bryant, on the other hand, you know, he's got Scott Boras as an agent. He's going to want, you know, a long-term, probably, you know, he'll be, what, 30. So he's probably going to want 6 or 7 years at
exactly.
$30 million.
Yeah, I would think six or seven years for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if that would be – in reality, smart of any team to give him that, but at least an American League team can plug him in as the DH late in his career. You know, I just, you know, and then with the, you know, there's already bad blood from, you know, the Cubs, one, keeping him down to push the arbitration back, even though they did nothing wrong. And then two, that crappy lowball offer they gave him a couple years ago, which was just an insult. So there's just no way they're going to have a good working relationship unless they come up with, you know, a $30 to $35 million a year contract. And with the way this team is cutting payroll and saving money, that's not going to happen. And unfortunately, you can't sign Bryant, Baez, and Rizzo. There's just no way they'll do that.
No. So what do you think he's looking for, what, $200 million for 6 years or 7 years?
Yeah, I would guess 6 to 7 years between 180 and 210. You know, maybe even a little more.
Well, let's assume the logical point of view that they do deal him. And now that his value has increased, will that give the Cubs a better group of prospects? I mean, you would think that would at least be the way to go for them.
You know, it should. You know, you do wonder after some of the trades they made earlier where they actually didn't get top prospects back when they should have. You know, being the fact that Brian, you know, like I know the Darvish trade, San Diego picking up that extra money was the reason the Cubs didn't get much back for him. And in reality, that's what this team wants is to get rid of that money. But Bryant's in his last year, so that shouldn't be as big of an effect here. So, you know, we'll see. But, yeah, they should get a decent return for a guy you're going to get half a season out of at least. And, you know, the tough part is if he had another agent and if you could negotiate after you traded for him, they could probably get more. But the fact that he's a Boris client and Boris almost, with the exception of Steven Strasburg, every one of his clients goes into free agency, you know that there's a good chance you may only have him for half a year, even if you're the Yankees or the Mets or one of those teams that's willing to throw big money at him.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm wondering, by the way, if the Cubs regret dealing Caratini.
Yeah, you know, I doubt it, but, you know, we'll see how that plays out as well. You know, Wilson Contreras, even though, you know, he's got a ton of value because he has that extra year of arbitration, he could be the guy they could get the most for in a trade probably.
But that would mean a complete rebuild because they have nobody. Well, they do have maybe a couple of guys in AA, AAA that might make it eventually to the major leagues that look like they have a lot of potential, but they're, I would say, at least 2-3 years away.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm very surprised where they are now. You know, and considering we are coming up on June 1st, it's a surprise that they're hanging around in first place when you look at this, especially this pitching staff. You know, offensively they have talent, but pitching-wise, it's a mess. But so far it's been working. You know, they've been really lucky, and, you know, Adbert Azalea has looked very good. He looked really good today. Obviously the wind helped. But, you know, it's Kyle Hendricks and kind of a hodgepodge after that. You know, and even Hendricks has had his up and downs. So
yeah, look at Hendricks yesterday. He looked like a world beater most of the game. He wound up giving up 3 solo home runs. That is not a number one pitcher, in my opinion, even though he wound up winning the game.
No, well, I think we knew he's not a number one. He's a 2 at best. But on this team, he's a number one because of the situation they put him in. So,
can you see Azalea being a number one eventually if he continues at this level and improving the next year or two?
You just never know. You know, you got to remember, they told us Carl Edwards was the next Pedro Martinez. So, you know, you just never know with this team. You know, remember Dwayne Underwood was supposed to come in and be the ace of the staff. You know, Underwood now pitches for the Pirates, and I believe Edwards was just released by the Braves and signed with somebody else, so he's back in the minors. So, when it comes to judging talent, the Cubs are the last team I'm going to listen to. You know, I'll go down to the ballpark and listen to the parents talk about their little leaguers before I'll believe anybody in the Cubs organization.
I wonder when they do deal Brian, will they be looking for pitching prospects in return rather than position players?
Well, you know, you would hope they could get some pitching because they've shown the incredible ability to not be able to develop their own. You know, I mean, you can go through, I mean, God forbid, try to come up with the last pitcher who actually came through the Cubs system. You know, not just when they acquired him when he was in AAA, but actually came through the Cubs system. that had any success with them.
Well, Greg Maddux comes to mind, I believe. Wasn't he in the Cubs system?
Yeah, well, honestly, I believe Carlos Zambrano would probably be the guy off the top of my head.
Yeah.
You know, right. I know a lot of people are Kyle Hendricks, but you got to remember he pitched all the way through the Texas organization until he was in
right,
AAA.
Right.
And then the Cubs acquired him. So a big chance to see him up.
Never count him because, as you pointed out, he was in the Texas organization before he became a Cub.
So, yeah, it's difficult. And, you know, maybe Azalea can be that guy. You know, maybe he can be the next quality pitcher that the Cubs develop because they're due. You figure you just get lucky. You know, and the weird part is it's not like they've traded guys away that have went on to become great starters. You know, they just literally have not had them.
Yeah, and he was kind of fortunate today. I'm sure that Cincinnati left a lot of men on base and scoring it with various scoring opportunities, but I guess he came through when it counted.
Well, you know, and obviously, you know, if you pitch in Wrigley Field, you got to know how to pitch in the wind. You know, that's not going to hurt you. So, you know, you can go out there and throw more, you know, better strikes, even if you miss out over the plate. It, you know, anything. The only reason Bodie's ball got out was because it was on a line drive.
Yeah, yeah.
So
the Cubs would have had another home run under normal conditions with that player, that 30-year-old they brought up and hit a home run for Pittsburgh, also hit one as a pinch hitter today. They looked gone, but that wind just blew it back.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's the price you pay in a Wrigley Field. You know, you're going to get that, and, you know, there's just nothing you can do.
No, and then when the wind starts blowing out in June and July, the pitchers will be complaining and moaning about the adverse conditions that they have to face when they pitch at Wrigley Field.
So, yeah, it ends up being just the opposite, so. But, yeah, kind of the deal.
And Kimbrel had a birthday today. He was 33, and he looked pretty efficient in the ninth inning.
Yeah, you know, he's another guy. You know, he has an option for next year. So, you know, he could be another guy who's a very valuable trade piece if he continues to show, you know, that he can get outs late in a game. So, you know, he's another guy they're going to have to make a decision on.
Yeah, I still have the sinking feeling that the Cubs are not going to sustain this kind of success. And they'll be peddling some players along All-Star time.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, as much as I hate to say it, it would be better for the team, you know, because I don't want to see Chris Bryant walk away for nothing. You know, I mean, when you look, you know, they got nothing for Kyle Schwarber when if they would have made a move right after the World Series, they could have got quite a bit for him. You know, but again, that was Theo not running to get rid of his guys, and that's who these guys are. They're Theo's guys. And the sad part is if he was still here, we wouldn't even be talking about this because he wouldn't consider trading any of these guys. They're his guys. And he was too much in love with them to make the moves. And in the end now, it's hurt the Cubs.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's the current cycle of baseball. With the exception of two or three teams, they're going to go through these cycles of contention, then price themselves out of the market with all these players and losing them to free agency and starting over again.
Yeah, you know, there are very few teams now in baseball that contend every year, you know, with the exception of maybe I would say the Yankees and the Dodgers because they're willing to spend money. You know, the A's seem to have some kind of magic where they can just continue to find their way to contend even though they don't spend a bunch of money. And the Rays,
also,
Dan and I talked about them on Wednesday, probably the smartest team in baseball. Because of what they're able to.
Well, Atlanta was down for a couple of seasons, but it didn't take them long to become a contender very quickly. I mean, they had a couple of down years, and they were back on top, and this year they're not in first place just yet, but I expect them to be at the end of the season.
Yeah, well, you know, they're another one of those teams that's dealing with a boatload of injuries. So if they get their guys back, maybe they get there. If they continue to struggle with injuries, then it's just going to be one of those years. You just got to write it off.
Injuries this year, a lot of hamstring injuries, and people are speculating that maybe it's because of last year was a shortened season, and it's starting to take its toll this year when they grind back into a normal 162-game schedule.
Yeah, you know, but what I don't understand about that is, like, I don't agree with that at all because the player had the entire off season. You know, it's not like last year ended and they started right back up. They had a full off season to get ready for this year. So, you know, there's no way that has any type of contributing factor to, you know, to what's going on at all.
I know that Steve Stone was speculating on that during last night's White Sox broadcast that's one of the reasons why there's so many hamstring injuries this year. But obviously you don't agree with his theory.
No. No, well, if it does, that means you didn't prepare properly in the off season, so that's all on you. You know, I mean, whose fault would that be?
Yeah, the bad thing about these hamstrings, of course, is that it could linger on and on, and not just matches on the IL for 10 days, but it's going to affect your performance when you come back, and you're prone to having an injury again sometime during the rest of the season.
So, yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, obviously there's ways to avoid it. You know, you've got to, you know, make sure you're continually stretched out, and, you know, they have, you know, plenty of ways to do that now. You know, basically every clubhouse is luxury. I think even the ones at, you know, Old Wrigley have been updated. So there's plenty of room for you to stretch. You have, you know, access to trainers whenever you need them. So, you know, my guess is my teams probably have masseuses as well. You could probably bring one in and, you know, get it loosened up in between at bats if you wanted to.
Seems like a lot of those injuries occur when the player is hustling down the line on a bang bang play at first base, and they'll seem to get that hamstring injury.
Yeah, you know, and I get that some are unavoidable. It's just going to happen. And then you also have to wonder, and I know not every guy is doing this, but, you know, performance-enhancing drugs also up the risk of injury because of the different stressors it puts on ligaments and muscles and stuff. So, you know, you do have to wonder if maybe some of these guys are taking something they're not supposed to, because you damn well know not every player in baseball is clean.
No, that's for sure. Now, maybe some of the players have found a way to get around the drug tests that are and having something concealed that really should be banned.
Yeah, well, you know what they say, the guys who come up with the drugs are always one step ahead of the guys testing for the drugs. So, you know, you come up with a test for it, and then somebody comes up with a variation that beats it.
Yeah, there'll always be some guys who look for the clear and the cream, right?
So, you know, there's always, you know, always going to be players looking for that a little bit more, you know, no matter who you are. I mean, remember, Barry Bonds was one of the greatest players in the game, and he still decided he needed it.
Yeah, and I worry about his long-term health, and the same thing with Sammy Sosa, because you take a look at their heads and their necks towards the end of their career. That's not natural.
No. You know, and that was the biggest tip-off with Bonds, was every year they had to keep getting him a bigger hat. And, you know, your head doesn't grow like that. You know, I mean, my hat size hasn't changed since I think I was 18 or 19. So, you know, how did his keep growing when he was in his, you know, his 30s? So,
yeah.
You know, so it was cool. You know.
That's pretty obvious when you see, you know, a year-by-year comparison for Sosa and for Barry Bonds. And you have to worry about their long-term longevity. Is that going to affect them down the line?
You know, it has been said that, you know, regular steroid abuse shortens your lifespan. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, both those guys, I think, are they in their 60s now? So, you know, I mean, obviously they're not on anything now. And I get, you know, if you're living a healthy lifestyle, you know, maybe it'll extend their life a little. But, you know, again, sadly, that's just kind of something we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and yeah, they could be off of it now, but it's still, I mean, does that stay in your system? Who knows? It's still questionable.
You know, a lot of things people forget when you're taking steroids is the heart is a muscle. So muscles get bigger on steroids. Your heart is going to get bigger. You know, an enlarged heart isn't something you want.
Yeah,
so,
you've seen some athletes die, and the report is that it was a heart attack. But it was a heart attack
caused
by the steroids.
Right. You know, I mean, we've seen how many professional wrestlers die young from that. And we know, you know, they were on something their entire wrestling career. You can tell just by the way they looked.
Yeah, Jim Hill died, he was in his early 50s?
Yeah.
A big steroid user.
You know what I mean? There are guys we lose younger than that, you know, in their late 40s. So.
Yeah. I know that Jerome Young died of a heart attack, but I'm not sure if he was on steroids or not.
Yeah, it may have been the other drugs Jerome Young was taking, or New Jack, anybody who watches wrestling would know him as. He was an admitted cocaine user and, other things. So, yeah.
Yeah, you see the cause of death as a heart attack, but you know that it was a heart attack plus what he was taking over the course of his career.
Well, you know, like that was the official cause of death for Road Warrior Hawk was a heart attack.
Yep.
But he had so many problems. But besides the steroids, he had gotten into harder drugs. And while he was clean when he passed away, you know, he had turned his life around. But the damage he had already done to himself was just too much.
Yeah, it was too late to correct the damage that he inflicted upon himself over the course of his drug use.
So, yeah, and, you know, that's a lot of the things these guys run into. You know, by the time they get clean or they get straight or they get off whatever it is, it's too late for the body. You know, those internal organs don't recover like that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, some of these guys want to live the high life and experience all these thrills and everything else, and they wind up paying the ultimate price for it.
Yeah, or, you know, in some cases, you know, like Melky Cabrera fully admitted that he used it because he was in a free agent year and he wanted to get a big payday. So, you know, that was his whole idea about it. It cost him 80 games, but he got a pretty solid payday from, the White Sox.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there's some athletes who have taken the stuff over the years and still wound up managing to live a long and full life, too.
There's always different people react different ways to different things. So it's kind of up to you.
You gotta
hope that you're the one that whose body can handle it.
Yeah, I'm still surprised that the superstar Billy Graham is still alive
With
the health issues he's had because of all the drugs and steroids he did over the course of his wrestling career.
Yeah, well, you know, Hulk Hogan is still alive, and, you know, it was clear he was all gassed up, you know. So there are guys that have managed to, you know, to stick around.
Yeah, you got to – well, he rolled the dice, and so far he's winning, but it's a risk, an awful risk he's taken to his health. But there's nothing he could do about it now.
No, definitely not. But, you know, while we did venture off this way, I forgot to mention to you that Jack and Jerry Briscoe did lose to Mark, and I believe his brother's name is Jay in that tournament. But I got today's matches for you, so I want to see who you were going with. The first matchup has the Rockers, which, of course, is Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, or the Midnight Rockers, if you remember them from the AWA. And their matchup is against the Hollywood Blondes, which was Steve Austin and Brian Pillman. So which way do you go in that one?
I go with the Midnight Rockers in that one.
Yeah, they are actually winning 53-45 right now. So that one's close. And then the other one has the Smokin' Guns, which of course is Billy and Bart Gunn, against the Blade Runners, which was, I believe they were Rock and I forgot. I don't think they were Sting. They were Rock and something else.
Yeah.
But then of course one went on Sting and the other one went on to become the Ultimate Warrior. So what are you going with there?
Well, I would have to go with the think about. I would not go with Blade and Sting on that one. Is it Blade and Sting, or I forgot now what their terms were. But they weren't teamed
that
long.
Can't remember.
They were very green
when
they were wrestling, if I remember correctly. They were very green. And I don't think they stuck around long enough to form a cohesive tag team. Very, very brief period of time. So I will have to go against them in that tournament.
Yeah, no, that one is kind of a blowout. The Smokin' Guns are up 71-9.
Yeah, well,
so
at least I was right about that one.
They weren't that great a team
either, by the way. The Smokin' Guns weren't all that great a tag team anyway, but...
I wasn't thrilled with them. I can tell you that our favorite tag team now, the Young Bucks, did advance yesterday. They beat the Natural Disasters pretty easily.
Well, they're a talented team, but I mean, in a realistic match, how would they compete against, for example, the Road Warriors, Bruiser and Crusher, the Vachons, any of the teams who've had some weight behind them?
Yeah, well, you know, that's my, you know, my biggest issue with them is just the fact that they don't wrestle. You know, it's got nothing to do that they're not talented at all. They just, they're not wrestlers.
They're a high spot machine, aren't they?
Yeah. You know, that's just what they do.
Well, they were backyard wrestlers, weren't they? Didn't they get their start as a backyard wrestlers?
Yeah, they did. So,
and they had the same style now that they did then.
Yeah, nothing's really changed with them. Like, I don't believe, they've ever been to like a actual wrestling school. I think it was just they went from their backyard to managing to get booked on the indie scene, and then just kind of kept going, and you know, it took quite a while, but they did make a name for themselves. So
yeah, I would speculate that they wouldn't do very well against a solid wrestling team.
So yeah, and you know, it is interesting, they are one of the few what I would call top performers that have never worked regularly in a major promotion, obviously AEW being the first time, but they founded that. You know, like they never had a run in WWE. You know, they're really not old enough to have worked for WCW. I know they had bits and pieces in TNA, but I think they were more of a mid-card. You know, they had a run, you know, they had the run in New Japan, which was their first real big deal, because let's face it, Ring of Honor, as much as everybody loves them, has just never broken through.
Did they wrestle for them at all?
Yeah, they spent a little bit of time in Ring of Honor. I believe that was their gateway to New Japan, because they hit Ring of Honor first, and then they had the working agreement with, maybe it was Dragon Gate, but it was one of the Japanese promotions, and that's how they made their debut there before ending up in New Japan. So,
you know, I got to ask you something. You were talking about the Briscoes advancing, Briscoe, I guess is how they spell their names.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to watching them wrestle. I'd never seen them before. And then when they had Ring of Honor was on for a year or so, and I was able to watch them, I was very disappointed. I didn't think they looked very good at all as a team. And I don't know, what are your thoughts about them?
You know, I'm oddly just kind of middle of the road with them. I mean, I could take them or leave them. You know, I was also, like, the first time I saw them, I was a little disappointed, but they were built up in my head by people that, you know, I actually at the time I was still wrestling with that were just marking out for them and thought they were the greatest thing, you know, ever. And I didn't, you know, they're just not my taste, I guess you would call it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's very similar to the Young Bucks. I, you know, everybody, every indie guy loves the Young Bucks, and I don't. So.
Well, I mean, the average fan must like them because of their style, and that's what they're used to watching. And not much wrestling, but tons of high spots.
Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, if you watch a Young Bucks match, there's zero wrestling. You know, you're not going to see any holds. You're not going to see anything like that. It's, you know, I mean, the matches start off with high spots.
Are those guys actually over 200 pounds, or are they under?
Legitimately, I would say under. I don't know exactly what they're announced as, but I can't see either one of them being 200 pounds. Here, they have them listed here, Matt at 172 and Nick at 178. So.
Well, in a legit match, well, I mean, it's worked anyway, we know that. If they competed, say, for example, against a tag team of Killer Kowalski and Don Leo Jonathan, two of my favorites, well, I wouldn't like their chances too much.
Yeah, no, you know, and like the size difference, like luckily, you know, now all wrestlers are smaller. You know, it's just the way the business has turned. You know, it's a smaller man's game now. It used to be big guys. You know, just to see them in with some of the larger teams, like you mentioned the Road Warriors, you know, that would, you know, or even a team like, you know, Butch Reed and Ron Simmons,
yep,
who were, you know, large men. It would just be, it would be tough to give up the believability factor that you're asked for with professional wrestling.
Could the Road Warriors actually work more than 10 minutes in a match?
Yeah, they've actually had some longer matches. Remember, they spent some time in Japan where
that's
you,
true. Yeah.
You know, you don't do short matches. So, you know, that's the thing, you know, a lot of people forget, you know, the guys like Hansen and Brody and stuff, you know, they would work short matches here in America and go over to Japan and work, you know, 30, 45 minutes in their matches.
Yeah. Yeah, I would not like the Bucks' chance against Hansen and Brody.
Oh, God, yeah, just some of those, you know, so some of those teams that would just be, you know, just be odd to watch, you know, and I get that. You know, like the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson had a lot of success as smaller tag guys. So, you know, there is a case to be made, but, you know, even there, you know, it took a while for them to beat bigger men. It wasn't, you know, huge, you know, quick, hey, we're going to have a short, you know, we're going to go 8 minutes and we're going to beat you guys. So.
Yeah. Jannetty and Michaels in their prime, were they at least over 200, slightly over 200 pounds, 205, 210?
You know, maybe Jannetty, I don't know if Michaels ever got there. You know, I know I always used to laugh when they would announce him as being 230 pounds when he was heavyweight champion, because that was the step over lightweight or cruiserweight. Because you know damn well he was never there. You know, maybe on a good day he got to 205, but yeah, he was never that big.
No, he did seem like a good worker to me, at least. He seemed to have some quite a few wrestling, actually legit wrestling moves. I remember that 60-minute Ironman match that he had against Bret Hart a number of years ago. I think I went six into overtime.
Well, you know, and you got to remember, a lot of those guys, like Shawn Michaels, was trained by a legitimate wrestler. You know, a lot of these guys were trained by guys that didn't do high spots, you know, or rarely did high spots.
That's
so,
right. He was trained by Lothario. Was it
yeah,
Lothario out of Texas trained him?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was.
So, yeah,
he was,
you know, and obviously.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. He was a technically sound wrestler, so I guess he absorbed some
right.
of his training.
You had to learn. You know, you had to learn how to wrestle. You know, and like I saw like part of that Booker T documentary, that biography they did, and even he mentioned that, you know, his brother Stevie Ray was the power guy, and every once in a while Booker would jump off the ropes. So you know,
yeah.
they didn't do it, you know, all that much back then.
No, and they had some success at least. But his brother retired pretty early, didn't he? He didn't stick around too long.
Yeah. You know, I think. Once Booker broke out as a single star, you know, I remember Stevie Ray hanging around and doing the NWO thing for a while, but, you know, nothing against him, but Booker was obviously, he was the quality on the team. He carried the team.
That's
so,
right, yeah.
You know, he
yeah.
was the best wrestler.
Yeah, well, I could do without the spin-a-rooney gimmick and stick to wrestling, but that's just me and fans, I guess, loved it.
Yeah, well, you know, and that was the thing back then is, you know, that was, you needed that shtick to get over, and that was his. And,
yeah.
you know, it worked. He did a, you know, got probably the most successful guy from WCW to come over when WWE bought them.
Yeah, and he stuck around as a commentator for quite a while, too.
Yeah, you know, and I know, I think he still pops up on, like, their pay-per-view pre-shows and stuff. He still does stuff for them, and he does have his own wrestling company in Houston. He does a reality championship wrestling and has a school and everything.
Oh, that's
so,
right. That's right. He has that set in Texas. He's had that for a few years now.
Yeah. Apparently they're pretty successful. So, you know, and I know WWE just signed a couple of his trainees. So we'll see how they develop and what happens there. But, yeah, you know, I mean, that's one of those things. If you're looking to train, those are the kind of places to go because, obviously, he's got an in.
Yeah, yeah. And you're talking about the smaller wrestlers making it nowadays and as compared to years ago. Of course, in the WWE, you still have some of the larger wrestlers like Drew McIntyre and Strowman and Bobby Lashley competing at the high level.
Yeah, you know, and I was trying to run through my head in AEW who their really big guys are, and obviously they have Lance Archer, and, you know, I know Miro's not tall, but he's a big dude.
Brian Cage also is pretty big, isn't he? Isn't Brian Cage fairly big? Brian Cage?
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Yeah, I see Brian Cage, and then the guy they've got him working with, that Will Hobbs, is another big guy. But, yeah, you know, most of their top guys are smaller guys.
Yeah, well, their champion is not a very large wrestler.
No, you know, and then, you know, like the guy Miro just beat for that title, Darby Allin, was a really small guy.
I doubt if he weighed more than 170, legitimately.
Yeah, if he was lucky.
Yeah,
so,
and
you know,
that's why I'm glad he lost
just
the title, because it would really, the credibility factor, if he beat Miro clean, would have been off the charts.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, they protected him, obviously. You remember the week before he got thrown down the concrete
right.
stairs. So
right.
he was protected really well in losing the match. Because I know he's very popular. The kids really like him and his gimmick. So he's a top star just kind of waiting to break out. You know, and if AEW can handle him right, because he's not a vice president like the majority of the other top guys, you know, they've got something on their hands. You just got to wonder if ego is going to get in the way and they're not going to be able to do it correctly.
Yeah, it's interesting. And the WWE, and I have to say, are promoting some small guys. Like Riddle is not a real big wrestler in terms of weight, is he, legitimately?
No, you know, but what they like about him is he has a legitimate, you know, Ultimate Fighting background. So that makes him a little more credible.
Yeah, and he seems to be over with the fans.
Yeah, there's something about that goofy gimmick that everybody seems to like. So.
Well, the same thing like Orange Cassidy, who was another small wrestler, but the fans seem to like his gimmick in AEW.
Yeah, God, it's unbelievable how over that gimmick is, and I mean to be honest, I don't really get it, but you know, with that, just kind of how it goes.
And how long could that gimmick last? Legitimately, you think? I mean, before it wears out.
He's used it for many years, and you know, apparently it's always been over, but obviously he was never a guy that WWE was going to bring in and allow to do that.
No.
So you know, now, you know, he's got a stage now, and we'll see how long it can hang on.
Yeah, well, he should make the most of his opportunity while he has a chance.
Because guys have hung on, you know, Ric Flair's done the same gimmick for how many years now?
Yeah, I've emailed you many times that one thing about some people think he was the greatest pro wrestler ever is that every one of his matches are exactly the same, and I found out to my surprise that that's the same thing that Bruno Sammartino said about Ric Flair in an interview one time. He said, you've seen one Ric Flair match, you've seen them all.
Well, you know why they used to do that, don't you?
Why is that?
They were out on the road 7 days a week. So instead of having to remember the same match,
right?
You know, I mean, you remember they were wrestling. You know, they'd wrestle at minimum seven, sometimes eight or even nine times during the week. All you had to do was remember the one match.
Yeah. Truth be told, in his younger days, though, I remember reading this story. He had two matches in the same day with Harley Race, afternoon match and an evening match. Both matches went to 60-minute draws, and according to what I read about it, both of those matches were entirely different. Both draws were complete, but that was in maybe earlier part of his career when he could do things like that. But as he got older, it just, like you said, every match was the same.
Yeah, you know, you also have to remember that, you know, we didn't have the internet to report on every match back then, too, so you could do the same one in different markets, and it was new to everybody.
Right, and I may have told you this, I'm sure I told you this story, but Bruno Sammartino, when Buddy Rogers was the United States champion, had a program against him, and they wrestled up and down the East Coast. They wrestled six or seven times, Washington and Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, New York, and every match, the finish ended the same exact way. One fall apiece, and Sammartino covers him for the winning pinfall, and at the count of two, Buddy Rogers taps on the back, and Bruno stands up with raising his hand in triumph, falls for the high knee, and gets pinned. Every night on the East Coast, they use the same finish. Of course, as you mentioned, this is before the internet. I don't think you can do that anymore and get away with it.
Yeah, and you got to remember, working with some guys is more difficult than working with others. You know, like a guy like Randy Savage, who likes to plan his matches out move for move for move for move for move, you can't do that every night. It just wears on you. I mean, imagine doing that seven, eight, nine times a week with a guy. It's easier just to go out and do the same thing.
Yeah. It didn't look like he planned it that much, but I guess that's what behind the scenes, he was pretty meticulous about planning the choreography of his match.
Yeah. Yeah, like they mentioned that match that Savage and Steamboat had at WrestleMania that is considered one of the greatest of all time. Apparently, they worked on it in Savage's backyard in Florida, I believe, where he had a ring for about 3 weeks. They spent going through that match because Randy Savage was that anal about doing it. And they just went over it and over it and over it for 3 weeks until they did it.
Yeah, to turn out, it was a good match. I remember seeing that one. And, that was an impressive match by today's wrestling standards, at least.
So, just one of those things. And, a top notch. You know, like I said, some people, consider it one of the greatest matches of all time. So,
well, I wouldn't go that far.
Just
one of the better WWE matches I've seen, let's put it that way.
Look at it this way. I saw a list of the WWE top 10, the 10 greatest WrestleMania matches. And that finished behind Hogan and Andre the Giant, which you can't tell me was a great match because I'll never buy that.
I'll never buy that. And what was that, about an eight-minute match? And Andre let him get body slammed by Hogan, and that was the end of it. And it was not a very impressive match.
No. You know, and unfortunately, you know, Andre was towards the end there where he couldn't really do much in the ring anymore, but he still had the name value, and as a heel, it was a big attraction. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
you keep running them with them. But, yeah, there was that. It was not something Andre should be remembered for. He's got matches that were much, much better than that, and, you know.
Yeah, well, it was nice of him to do the job and allow himself to get slammed like that.
Yeah, you know, he did, you know, towards the end of his career, he did more jobs. You know, I remember, you know, I believe the Ultimate Warrior slammed him and beat him. You know, and there were a few more there as he got a little older, so.
You got to give some of the professionals a lot of credit for when they started doing jobs towards the end of their career, and you were mentioning that. And Pat O'Connor, for example, who wrestled with the former world champion, great, great technical wrestler, but he started doing jobs at the end in St. Louis and Kansas City to promote the younger wrestlers. So you got to give him credit for doing that.
Well, you know, and that used to be the way it went, you know, is you would pass on the torch. You know, you would get beat by that guy, even if it had to be multiple times to get him over. You know, but then Hulk Hogan kind of changed all that with his creative control contract where he just refused to lose to anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then other guys wanted that same thing, and it became a deal of where there's just no, you know, some guys will still do it, but it's few and far between now.
Well, you got to give Jericho credit in the AEW for doing it a little bit, because didn't he put over Orange Cassidy, for example?
Yeah, he's put over Orange Cassidy and MJF.
That's
right. They both have wins over him. So, you know, but he's, you know, when you look at it, he's an old school guy. You know, he's been around a long time compared to these guys. So we'll see how, you know, when it comes time for some of these other guys to pass the buck, if they'll be willing to do it. So.
Yeah, it's a different mentality right now about that, the business, I guess. And I'm not sure if they did the same thing on the independent circuit when you wrestled for those 20 years, if people were willing to do the jobs. I guess there was a lot of ego-driven situations where they just didn't want to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, surprisingly, you know, the majority of guys didn't have problems with it. You know, I mean, I've told the story multiple times here. We ran into the problem with Kamala where he just refused to lose in any way, shape, or form, and we couldn't use the guy. But, you know, like we had Sandman come in a couple times, and like both times he was like, hey, it's your house. You should go over. How do you want to do it? So, you know, some guys were very, you know, very easy to work with.
Shane Douglas also, right? Had no problems.
Oh, yeah. He's piece of cake. You know, he was very simple to work with. And so was, you know, like guys like Justin Credible and Jerry Lynn were really easy to deal with. So, yeah, you know, no problem at all.
All these guys that you mentioned were big in when ECW was in its prime.
Yeah. So, yeah, because I'm trying to think, you know, like most of the guys, when they brought in the former WWE guys, they didn't do matches. They just did autographs.
Right.
So, you know, and the sad part, like to me, that always took away from the show because you got people standing in line waiting for autographs while you got matches going on.
Yeah, I remember seeing that when I went to the show in Oak Lawn. The matches were going on,
yeah.
And at a table, Christian was signing autographs at the same time.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, yeah, you know, it's great. You know, you get that ticket revenue from the 5,000 tickets you sold, but nobody saw your product. Are they going to come back?
Yeah,
so.
that's the issue.
But all right, well, let's get into some picks here for you. You did split again last week, so you're still at 500, 33-33, and since the Cubs game is already in the books, and I kind of have a feeling the White Sox aren't going to get their game in tonight since we're we're in Chicago. I'm going to go a different route with your first pick tonight.
All right.
There are three NBA games tonight, so there are six teams in action. We got the Knicks at the Hawks, the Nets at the Celtics, and the Clippers at the Mavericks. Just so you know, the Knicks series, the Knicks-Hawks series is tied 1-1. Brooklyn's up on Boston 2-0, and the Clippers are up on, or the Mavericks are up on the Clippers 2-0. Out of these six teams, how many of them score more than 119.5 points?
Hmm. Think about that one. That's a good one. I would say only one of the three will score over 119.
All right. So we will.
Playoff basketball. That shouldn't. But today's playoff basketball eludes me, I'm afraid.
I honestly, I thought you were going to go a little higher there, but okay, we will see how that works out. And now we will give you an extended one here, starting tonight and going through the weekend. All right, we will have one, two, three, six NHL playoff games. Tonight we have Minnesota at Las Vegas. That's game seven in that series. Tomorrow we have game six between the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens. We also have game one between the Islanders and the Bruins. So we'll just use these three games because there's no guarantee we're going to get all three on Sunday. So we're going to use out of these three games, Minnesota at Las Vegas, Toronto at Montreal, and the Islanders at Boston, how many shutouts will we get?
We will get none.
Oh, okay. So the big you're going to shut out the shutouts.
Yeah, I am shutting out the shutouts. I think they'll be competitive and there'll be low scoring games, but there won't be any shutouts. I'm saying a 3-2 game, 4-3, 2-1, but there will be no shutouts.
All right. Well, let's jump to tomorrow here in Chicago. We have the Reds obviously still in town at the Cubs. Luis Castillo starts for the Reds, and it's Zach Davies for the Cubs. Just plain and simple, who gets the win?
I go for Cincinnati tomorrow.
All right. I didn't see the weather. Was it going to rain again?
I think it'll be sunnier tomorrow. I think they'll be able to get the game in.
All right, and then we move on to Sunday. We have the Orioles. Again, they're here in Chicago as well at the White Sox. Keegan Aiken is making the start for the Orioles while Lucas Giolito goes for the White Sox. If they do play, the Orioles come in on a 10-game losing streak. Do they get a win here Sunday?
I think the White Sox will win that one.
All right, so there we go. We will lock all these in and see how you do. So I timed that pretty well. We're rolling right up to the end here. So you got your picks in, and we've got about 30 seconds left. So
what can we talk about
we'll
now?
My clock is way off. I still got us with some time, but the lady's telling me to play the music, so I guess we're done. All right, Anytime you want, tune in.